Hey everybody, welcome to the Strength and Health Podcast. I'm Scott Shetler. In this episode, I want to answer a question that I received from David Denk asking if I could cover the differences between how I train my strikers and grapplers, you know, if there's any training consideration differences between the two. And I thought this was a great question, so thanks for shooting me the message, David, and recommending that I cover this. I think when we talk about training athletes, there's this idea of sport-specific training, and oftentimes we see recommendations of maybe overloading specific sporting patterns and things like that. And I think this is a big mistake. I think we have to look at the training of any athlete, whether it's a fighter, whether it's a grappler, you know, football player, whatever. We have to break down the different training methods that they're utilizing. And there's two branches that we can consider. One is the general physical preparation, and then the other is the specific physical preparation. All right, so if we talk in terms of a fighter, for instance, a Muay Thai fighter or a striker or an MMA fighter or something of that nature, sport-specific training would be the actual practice of the sport itself. So this would be the time that they're putting in their fight gym, working with their fight coaches or their martial art teachers, where they're developing their martial arts skill, they're developing their fighting skill, they're doing things that specifically are specific to the sport that they participate in. In this case, the combat sport. So general physical preparation would be the things that they do to enhance that. So this would be everything from weight training, flexibility training, cardiovascular training, mobility training, conditioning. All the general physical training methods used to enhance their sport-specific practice, okay? So I think it's very important that we keep that in mind. And when I talk about the training of the combat athletes that I work with, I think it's important that you realize that I'm speaking specifically from the general physical preparation standpoint. So when I'm working with my grapplers, when I'm working with my fighters, we're doing general physical preparation in that I'm helping them with their strength and conditioning program, and I'm helping to enhance their physical attributes so that they can bring the best level of readiness to their specific training and then their training for competition. So with that being said, the differences in how I train my grapplers and fighters, and David did mention that it appears that I work mainly with grapplers, and I do, but I've got some MMA fighters that I do work with. And in the past, I've worked with boxers, Muay Thai fighters, in addition to the grapplers and MMA fighters. So I have worked with some strikers. I am predominantly working with grapplers right now. And while there are certainly some differences, which I'll get into, I think it's important to point out that the general physical preparation is very similar for both of these athletes. And when I say that, I mean that we have to look at an athlete's conditioning. I like to call it a conditioning wheel or a physical preparation wheel. And everything that they need in their physical development is a spoke on that wheel. So we have strength training, you know, we've got cardiovascular training, we've got flexibility, we've got mobility. We look at all these different physical qualities that they need, and we break that down based on the requirements of the sport. And then we assess the athlete to determine where they are in that level of preparation for their sport or where they fall among those needs. So in the combat of sports, you know, I'm going to look at the physical requirements of my grapplers. I'm going to look at the physical requirements of my fighters, and then I'm going to work with them to determine where their weaknesses are, where their strengths are. And then we use that information in building the program. Okay. So that's the first thing that we start out with, is a specific needs analysis and a thorough assessment of the athlete. And mainly when these athletes come to me, they're coming specifically to work on developing strength. And one of the trends that I've seen, whether it's grapplers, whether it's fighters, is they tend to be overly, overly developed anaerobically, but they tend to put most of their training time is spent on anaerobic training or circuit training. High intensity interval training is something that you might consider it as, but this is basically where they're doing metabolic circuits, where they're working at very high levels of output for a designated period of time, and then they're reducing the intensity, and then they're slowing their heart rate down. They're working at more of a recovery pace, and they alternate these intervals as such. I tend to see that that's usually what most of the athletes that I work with do as far as training goes. Usually where they're lacking is in their aerobic development, and then they're also usually lacking in their strength and power. Okay, so that being said, all my grapplers and all my fighters are working with me to raise their levels of maximal strength, to raise their levels of explosive power and explosive strength, and then to improve their cardiovascular conditioning, specifically their aerobic conditioning. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't work the anaerobic energy system. I just think that most of the athletes that I've seen are underdeveloped when it comes to aerobic training, because that's kind of the trend that we've seen in the fitness industry over the last 10 years, 20 years or so, that aerobic training has kind of become a bad word. It's often thought that too much time spent on aerobic training is going to eat up muscle mass. It's going to make an athlete weak. And yeah, maybe if you're training like an ultra marathoner or an athlete that doesn't need a significant amount of muscle mass, if they're just strictly concerned with aerobic performance, I certainly wouldn't train a strength and power athlete like that. But a certain amount of aerobic training is very important for these athletes, particularly athletes in the combat sports. So that's usually a big focus of the training. And then strength training is a big focus of the training. And like I said, we're usually focused on developing levels of developing their maximal strength as well as their explosive power. And I usually see, you know, the athletes usually can't jump that well. They can't jump that high when we do box jumps. And that improves over time, because when an athlete is kind of undertrained in the strength and power department, we usually see big results and big progress right away. So both my fighters and my grapplers are going to do things like big compound movements that improve their maximal strength and that improve their explosive power. So they're both going to do a lot of jump variations. We do a lot of box jumps. We do a lot of jumps off the knees. We do a lot of jumps from the seated position. We do a lot of weighted jumps. We do a lot of broad jumps and bounding. Exercises like that are going to be specific for both my strikers and my grapplers. And I shouldn't really divide it up like that, because obviously my MMA fighters I train, they train grappling as well. It's just they have their striking disciplines that they're training on top of grappling, whereas most of the grapplers I train do not participate in striking. They're strictly training for jiu-jitsu or wrestling or judo, you know, one of the grappling arts. So that being said, they are all focused on the development of maximal strength, development of explosive power. I talked about the jumps that we do for training, some of the things that we do to build maximal levels of strength. I build all my athletes' programs around the deadlift. I feel the deadlift is the cornerstone of the strength training program, whether they're fighters, whether they're strikers or grapplers. I like the deadlift for a number of reasons. One, it's a fairly easy exercise to teach. It's not as dangerous as a movement like a squat where you got a barbell on your back. So if somebody kind of eats it in the bottom of the squat, spotter's not paying attention, they might get hurt. The deadlift, if you can't make the lift, you simply drop the bar. The other reason that I like the deadlift is it's very easy to make it an exercise where we don't focus on the eccentric phase of the movement. So the eccentric phase of the movement is the lowering phase or the yielding phase of the movement. Think in a squat, that's when you lower the barbell where you drop down into to the bottom position of the squat. That's the eccentric phase of the movement. Now the deadlift starts in a contracted position. So you squat down, you grab the bar, and you stand up with it. So the deadlift is, it begins with the concentric phase of the movement, whereas the squat begins with the eccentric. Now, the eccentric phase of the movement is what creates the most muscle damage, muscle trauma. So if we're trying to build muscle mass, we're going to emphasize the eccentric phases of the movement on the lifts that we're doing, okay? You hear a lot, if you look at bodybuilding, a lot of bodybuilders have used techniques like emphasizing the negatives, you know, where they'll have a spotter help them lift the weight. They'll maybe lift a weight that is in excess of something that they can lift. Let's use the bench press, for example. If somebody can bench press 200 pounds, they may load 225 pounds on the bar and have their spotter assist them in lifting of the weight, and then they're going to lower the weight on their own and just focus on the eccentric phase of the movement. This creates a lot of muscle damage, which is great if you're trying to build muscle. Now, in the combat disciplines, in the combat sports disciplines, these sports usually require that the athlete maintain a certain weight. And oftentimes when I get an athlete, they're not looking to move up a weight class. Most of the athletes that I have usually walk around a little bit heavier than their weight class limit, and then they're cutting going into a competition. So a lot of these athletes cannot afford to build a lot of unnecessary muscle mass. So by using an exercise like the deadlift, we can focus on the concentric phase of the movement, and we can minimize the or de-emphasize the eccentric phase. So when they lower the weight in the deadlift, they're not going to focus on lowering the weight slowly. They're going to drop the weight quickly and controlled, but there's not going to be a lot of stress on the muscles. So again, that minimizes the chance for hypertrophying the muscles of the backside of the body that are being used in the deadlift. So that's one of the reasons that I like the deadlift over the squat as far as being the main focus of our training. The other, like I said, it's also a very easy lift to teach, and it also emphasizes pulling strength. And most of my combat sports athletes require an exceptional level of pulling strength. So we're going to use the deadlift as our primary movement. And then we're also going to use lifts like Zercher squats, where you're holding a barbell in the crook of your elbows and standing up with it. We're going to use things like our belt squat. And then when we do squat, we might use our safety squat bar. The reason that I don't like to use a straight bar with my fighters and my grapplers is when you hold a barbell on your back for a squat, you're externally rotating your shoulder to a large degree, and then you're holding the barbell, and that barbell's sitting across your traps and placing a heavy load on your shoulder joint. And that's going to create excessive wear and tear on the shoulders over time. And we're already talking about athletes that are beating their shoulders up, the mobility required for grapplers, their joints getting twisted into weird positions. You know, the fighters, they're a lot of emphasis with their striking. Their shoulders are undergoing a lot of stress. So I don't like to load them in the squat. So that's why I like to use our safety bar. It's got a big padded yoke that they wear over their traps around their neck, so they don't have to externally rotate the arms and load up the shoulders when they're squatting. And then things like our belt squat, where the load is attached to the hips, are another of our favorite squat variations. So again, we're going to make the deadlift the main focus of the training. That's usually what we're going to use for our maximal effort and our dynamic effort lifts. And then we're going to work in things like belt squats, safety bar squats, Zercher squats, and all kinds of squatting and pulling variations. So that's a constant with my strikers and my grapplers, because they both need exceptional levels of hip strength and power. Lower back strength is very important, so that's why I build the program around that. Then we work in the accessory exercises, and these are based on the individual needs of the athlete. So these are exercises that are going to strengthen the primary muscle groups that we're trying to build. It's going to be strength. You know, we're going to select exercises that strengthen up the lower back, the torso, the hips, the legs, the shoulders, you know, and all the support musculature required for striking, for kicking, for grappling, for pulling. You know, grip strength is a big issue. We're gonna focus on exercises that strengthen the grip. And then we're gonna use exercises to build the patterns that aren't heavily utilized in the sport. So with my grapplers, since they don't do a ton of pushing, we're gonna do things like floor presses or seated kettlebell presses are some of my favorite exercises, my favorite pressing exercises for my grapplers, as well as my fighters. We do a lot of pressing with the bandbell bar, which is this bamboo bar that you hang weights. We usually hang kettlebells or weight plates with bands from this bar, and it creates the bar kind of vibrates or shakes as a result of the weight being suspended from it, and it creates maximum muscular contractions around the shoulders. I thank Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell for coming up with this idea, and for Bandbell for creating these bars. Louis had his shoulder operated on. I believe he had a full shoulder replacement. And during his therapy is when he kind of conceptualized the idea for this type of training. And it's the Bandbell bar has just been a fantastic addition to our gym. So that's something that we do a lot of our pressing with. Like I said, seated kettlebell presses, seated alternating kettlebell presses, a big favorite of mine. We do a lot of pressing on our back from the floor. So floor presses with barbells, with kettlebells, things like that. So that's kind of how we go about building the programs for our strikers and our grapplers. And I should mention that we do a tremendous amount of torso work. We do a lot of reverse hypers. We do a lot of static ab exercises, ab exercises where the athletes are standing up, like with a pull down machine. They'll grab like a tricep rope, put it around their neck, and do like a standing ab curl. They'll do like wood chop type exercises. But a lot of exercises, the majority of our abs we do from a standing position. Sometimes we'll get in the glute ham raise. We might do some sit-up type variations where we're doing like punches against bands and things like that. So that there's just a lot of torso work that we do, a lot of static torso work, and then some things like leg raises, reverse sit-ups, Russian twists, and things like that. I think rotational capacity is a very important attribute for both of these athletes. So they both do a lot of rotational exercises, full contact twists. They do suitcase deadlifts, Russian twists, you know, rotational med ball throws, wood chops with, you know, while they're dragging the sled. Both of my athletes do a lot, the strikers and the grapplers do a lot of sled dragging, just walking with heavy sleds or doing like presses or walking backwards and doing rows, doing chopping exercises. There's just a huge variety of exercises that they do when they're doing their sled pulling, which is great because we can get both strength training and conditioning there. And again, when you're pulling a sled, the eccentric movement is non-existent. So we don't have to worry about creating a lot of muscle damage. The sled pulling is great for conditioning and strength training as well as restoration. Helps the athletes recover from their training. So both types of athletes do a lot of work on the sled. If we're to talk about some of the differences, there really aren't a lot. Maybe differences in that every individual athlete has different strengths and weaknesses. So certain athletes may do certain exercises because they're trying to develop areas where that individual athlete is weak. So it's not so much about whether it's a striker or a grappler as much as it is as this is the athlete, these are the needs of the sport, and then this is where he or she is weak. So we're going to implement these exercises to build those weaknesses. And then after a period of time, we're going to reevaluate the athlete and we're going to adjust the training based on the new weaknesses that emerge. So our training is a constantly evolving process. It's never static. Some of the differences is like, you know, when we look at our grapplers who compete, particularly those that compete in gi, and I'd say pretty much all my grapplers compete in both gi and no gi competitions. But when they're competing in gi competition, that adds an element that the mixed martial artists and the strikers aren't concerned with, because when you're competing in the gi and jiu-jitsu, you're utilizing your opponent's gi for leverage, for different grappling techniques, and as well as, you know, different chokes and joint locks and things like that. So one of the things that we'll do with the jiu-jitsu athletes to really focus on building a specific type of grip strength is we use gis, or this special device that we've developed that we call our gi breaker, or excuse me, our grip breaker, which is a gi grip training device. They will do a lot of their pulls with the gi. We'll throw a gi over a pull-up bar, and they'll hold on to the gi when they do their pull-ups. We'll attach our grip breaker to a lat pull-down machine or a seated cable row machine, and they'll do their pull-downs and their rows while gripping the gi material, and they can grab the lapel, they can grab, you know, pistol grip on the sleeve, so that they can utilize the different types of grips that they're going to use in gi jiu-jitsu as they're training various pulling motions. You know, we'll attach the gis to bands and we'll do different types of pulls against the bands. We'll even loop our grip breaker gi training device through the handle of a kettlebell and do kettlebell swings where they're gripping the material of the gi. So there's just a lot of pulling variations that we utilize the gi for. And even sometimes the fighters will do that just to get some indirect grip strength work. You know, one of the things I think is important for both my strikers and my grapplers is this concept of training economy. You know, we're trying to do the most that we can with the least number of exercises. You know, we have to look at the overall training volume of these athletes, how often they're doing their martial art training and their specific training, and remembering that the general physical preparation is supposed to enhance that. It's not supposed to detract from it, particularly when they're getting ready for a competition. And when they're in a fight camp or getting ready for a competition, it's not like we're going to be able to build a tremendous amount of strength during that time anyway. When you look at the other things involved, usually their training volume is ramping up at their martial arts school. They also may be going through a weight cut, so they may be reducing calories. So they're already going to be in a pretty physically depleted state. We've got to make sure that the strength training and the general physical training that we do does not drive them into overtraining. So what we often see is that they're not making their best strength gains in the weeks leading up to a contest. But what we're trying to do is maintain as much strength as possible and have that athlete at their highest level of readiness when they get weighed in and get into their competition. And we've had very, very good success with that. So if they're further out from a competition or they're not doing a fight camp, then we're usually pushing a little bit harder, you know, on the maximal strength training, and we're increasing the training volume to a greater extent, because there's other things that they can do to manipulate the recovery. You know, if they're not trying to make weight, they can eat a little bit more, they can eat a little bit better. You know, they should always be focused on rest and restoration means and things like that. So thinking back to the question here, if you know what the differences are, aside from that specific sort of grip training that we do with the gi and the gi grip training devices, there are certain things, like when we're doing some of our accessory work, I'll have my fighters do that my grapplers don't always do. Like one of my favorite things is when we're working in the belt squat and they're walking for time wearing the belt and the belt squat, the grapplers might pair up and they might do some pummeling training in the belt squat, whereas the fighters might do shadow boxing or work mitts while they're walking in the belt squat. One of the things that I have my fighters do to help build their shoulder endurance for their guard is to hold the bandbell bar with a kettlebell or two hanging off each side, and they'll hold the bar as if they've just completed a barbell curl. So the bar is about neck or chin high. Palms are facing them, they're holding it like they just finished a curl. And while they're walking, they're just holding that bar and it's bouncing around and it's putting a lot of stress on the shoulders. But because they're not flexing and extending the shoulders, it's building a very specific type of endurance. We'll do some different types of choking exercises while they're walking. They might take a football or a basketball and hold it in a kind of a rear naked choke position and squeeze it and get that isometric training. That's actually specific, you know, for both our grapplers and our strikers who compete in MMA. Now, obviously, I wouldn't have a straight up striker like a Muay Thai fighter or somebody like that do a lot of those choking drills, or a boxer. They probably wouldn't do a lot of those choking drills because they're going to be focused mainly on developing their striking, their punching. And if they're in a sport that utilizes kicks, we're going to focus things more on hip and leg power and torso power and things like that. So again, that's usually where we look at some of the differences. But what I would find is if you look at the training logs of all my athletes, you're going to see more similarities between them because the general exercises are pretty constant. You know, my athletes all do various types of deadlifts. They all do various types of squats and different pulling exercises. They do various types of pressing. And what the difference is, like I said, just to kind of recap, is the differences usually tend to be more on an individual basis based on that individual's needs, as, you know, we find out what their strengths and weaknesses are after an assessment. So, David, I hope that answers your question. And I guess if I just, you know, if we summarize this, I would say that don't think so much about are there differences in training strikers and grapplers as much as they all need general physical training. They all need certain levels of maximal strength development. They all need levels of explosive power development. They all need conditioning, developing the anaerobic and the aerobic energy systems. They all need mobility. They all need flexibility, right? You've got to look at all these physical qualities required of the athlete and then look at what levels are required for the performance, for optimal performance of their sport, and then compare where your athlete is right now to what those requirements are. And this is where you have to work with a good physical preparation coach to identify this kind of stuff. Your fight coach and your strength coach need to, you know, be able to sit down and work with you in identifying these things and then seeing how you stack up to those requirements. And then you just implement the general physical preparation exercises to fill in those gaps. So if you find that you're very poor aerobically and you've got poor levels of maximal strength, then you're going to need to do things that improve maximal strength to the greatest extent. So those are going to be exercises like compound ground-based exercises, like deadlifts, like squats, like pull-ups, like presses, you know, things that utilize multiple joints that are going to allow you to lift a very, very heavy load. You're going to do a heck of a lot more weight on a sumo deadlift than you're going to do on a single leg, stiff-legged deadlift. Okay. Now that you might be able to make a case for the single leg stiff legged deadlift, but it's not going to allow you to use the heaviest loads. So I'm going to use the sumo deadlift as my primary strength builder. And then I might use the single leg stiff legged deadlift as an accessory exercise, right? So you've got to choose the exercise that allows for the greatest loading when you're trying to build maximal strength. And then you plug in your accessory exercises to build up the primary movement or to address certain weak points. Like if somebody's got weak shoulders, some of your accessory exercises might be things like shoulder raises or shoulder presses or Indian club swinging, you know, things that are going to develop the strength and the resiliency in your shoulders. So again, it's not so much about the differences between combat athlete styles as it is the individual needs analysis. So again, I hope that answers your question. Thanks again for shooting me a message and suggesting this as a topic. I hope everybody's listening got something out of this, and hopefully it allows you to look critically at what you're trying to improve on as an athlete, or if you're a trainer, to look more critically at your athletes and what they need for their sport from a physical development standpoint. And then you can regress from there, compare the athlete to, you know, the needs of their sport. And then training becomes really easy at that point, because if you know what an athlete's strengths are, you know what their weaknesses are, and you know what's required of their sport, then it's just filling in those puzzle pieces and getting to work. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Again, if you've got any suggestions on topics for future shows, shoot me an email at scott@eptsgym.com or shoot me a message on social media. Let me know what you want to hear, and I'll do my best to either answer them myself or get somebody on here who can answer those questions. And this reminds me, my friend Jason asked about some of my cardiovascular training comments I've written a lot about lately, and I've talked about in some of the podcasts where we've been talking about conditioning and things like that. And one of his questions had to do with why strength athletes should do a little bit of aerobic training and why they shouldn't be afraid of, you know, doing a little bit of aerobic cardiovascular training. And I'd contacted a good friend of mine, Dr. Mike Martino, who's a director of exercise science down at Georgia College and State University here in Georgia. And I remember we talked about that a while back, and I just contacted him and asked him for a quote for the podcast, and we got this great discussion. I just realized, you know, I need to bring Mike on the show because his knowledge in that area is just huge. And we had this great conversation, and I wouldn't even do it justice just looking at my notes and trying to make sense of his comments, because he's way, way smarter than me when it comes to this kind of stuff. So I thought that would make for a great episode. So Jason, hang tight. I'm going to get Mike on the show, and that's going to be an awesome episode, because he has some really, really interesting ideas about the anaerobic system, particularly the alactic versus lactic anaerobic energy systems. And is there really an alactic, anaerobic energy system? So he had some really interesting comments that I think will be great for the show, and that even spawned into talking about dietary concerns. We talked a little bit about the keto diet and why that's not necessarily an optimal diet for for athletic performance and such. So we ended up having this great conversation. I said, Mike, I need to get you on the show. So he's going to come up to the gym one day, train for a little bit, and we're going to get him on the podcast. And look out for that, because that's going to be a great episode. But like I said, in the meantime, for any of you listening, if you want a specific topic covered, just shoot me a message, and I promise I'll get to them as soon as I possibly can. And again, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. And as always, stay strong and stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.